There's been a recent spate of public figures announcing that they're going vegan. Al Gore, Jay-Z, and Beyonce are just a few to announce in recent weeks.
Now, some people go vegan for health reasons. Others cite political reasons. But either way, it seems as though veganism is here to stay.
Joining us now to talk about going vegan and to take some of the mystery out of it is Ayende Howell. He's an executive vegan chef, founder of IEatGrass.com. Ayende, welcome to Central Time.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, like we said in the intro there, there have been a lot of famous people going vegan lately. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, I think it's sort of a natural evolution for people. Once you've seen all the documentaries and you've sort of have the knowledge that the American food industry has been, you know, deceiving us for the past 50-some years, I think the natural next step for people is looking at their diet, how they can improve it, and then veganism has been around for, you know, such a long time that it's just a viable option, and it's becoming more and more of a viable option. The more people like myself who are involved and dedicated to making good food and not bad vegan food, which is highly key in the turnover of the vegans, you know what I mean?
So when celebrities, you know, like an Al Gore or a Jay-Z or somebody make these announcements, is that good for veganism as a whole, or do people look at that and say, oh, it's just a fad, it's just some crazy thing some crazy people are doing?
I think that it's good and bad, right? I think it's good because, you know, in my work, I travel a lot. I have a private client. She's a recording artist, so we travel around a lot, and I work in a lot of different hotels, and this time around, like, just saying, oh, I'm doing vegan stuff, or I'm cooking vegan food, I'm cooking tempeh or quinoa or seitan, whatever the case may be, people were a lot more aware of what I was doing. So I think for the average American, celebrity often drives pop culture. So for it to be spoken from the lips of a celebrity or someone who, oh, I bought all their albums or I watched all their movies or so on and so forth, it makes them closer to the celebrity, which makes them closer to the lifestyle. But again, like, you can't just run up on the lifestyle. Like, you have to really sort of plot it out, because, like, you can't, for me, I would never go to a person and be like, okay, stop eating everything that you've ever eaten, you've eaten all your life. You have to, like, it's slow, you know. There'll be somebody telling me, like, you can't eat tofu anymore, I'd be like, dude, I've been eating this all my life, like, seriously, I can't, just stop. Like, you have to wean yourself off, you have to find new textures and flavors and combinations and things that are going to be comforting to you, because food is more than just what you eat. Like, food is about, like, how it makes you feel and what your mom made and what you got on your first date or Valentine's Day, you know. So there's so much more around food than just it being a fad or a diet. And I think that's the thing that makes it sort of out of people's reach, is like, how do I make it taste good?
You just mentioned you've been eating tofu all your life. You've been a vegan all your life. It wasn't as accepted a lifestyle probably when you were a kid. What kind of reaction did you get as growing up vegan?
Well, hence the name, I Eat Grass. I grew up in Tacoma, Washington, Pacific Northwest. And at the time, the word vegan wasn't even around. You just say, oh, I'm vegetarian. And people would look at you like you were growing another head in front of them. And I'm like, no. They're like, well, what do you eat? You know, like, you don't eat meat. You don't eat chicken. You don't eat ribs. What do you eat? You eat grass. Ha, 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 ha. You know, so a lot of teasing. You know, there's a lot. I think that's the thing that's still the stigma around veganism still, is that it's looked at as weird or sort of off-center, or like you can't go out with your friends and have a good time and be the vegan. I mean, I've been that guy all my life. You know, I go out. Most of my friends aren't vegan. We go out, and it's like, okay, I scan the menu, edamame, hummus, veggie burger, you know, or I pack some snacks beforehand, you know. But the social aspect of it is really, I think, what needs some help and some attention. You know, I have some friends who have vegan kids these days, and they, you know, they live in places like New York and San Francisco, so they're fine, you know. But getting outside of the coastal cities and into, like, middle America, I think it can still be a struggle, because it's just about knowledge, you know, and being educated on where your food comes from, what it does, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, and that branches off into a bunch of different things, you know, food deserts and, you know, being able to get an understanding of agriculture to, you know, children in lower income areas so that they understand that a meal is not a bag of Cheetos. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And that getting that awareness out there had to be a big part of the impetus behind starting the website IEatGrass.com. So why did you start it? How's it been received?
I started IEatGrass in 2010, and I started it because I was looking at the world and technology, and I just saw how everything was sort of being put into warp speed as far as technology and the way that we were receiving information. And I said, you know what, I got to get in on this thing. And I started my blog not really knowing, you know, what I was doing. And it has grown into an information hub for people. My Twitter account and my, which is at Allende, A-Y-I-N-D, and my iGrads account. What we do is we sort of give out information on that. I scroll the internet, and I have some interns at work. And we scroll the internet, and we figure out, like, okay, what sort of information can filter through the sustainability lens, through this sort of in a very tongue-in-cheek, accessible way. Because my goal with iGrads from the beginning was to make it not 100% about just being vegan. It's about life, too, because, you know, being vegan is a small part of your life. It's a big sort of, it's made to be a big part of your identity, I think, with, you know, the celebrities and whatnot. But it's a smaller aspect when you look at, you know, family and loves and movies and, you know, music and everything that you do on a daily basis. You know, you eat three times a day. So I want an iGrass to be a place where people can come, find good recipes, eat some good food, also learn, you know, read a review about their favorite movie, or they could also get some makeup advice or some fact advice or whatever the case may be. You know, it's lifestyle.
So are you trying
lifestyle through the lens of, like, this is how you do it, this, you know, in this new lane of sustainability and veganism.
Well, let's get into the food. You mentioned the recipes there. I would imagine, and personally, I think this sometimes, one obstacle to eating less meat is we don't know how to cook without it. And the idea is that without meat, and especially here in Wisconsin, without the dairy, food is going to be boring and bland. Make the case that food could still be interesting without the animal products.
Well, what you have to do is you have to sort of look at food and recipes and culinary arts, they're ancient arts. They've been around. I mean, people were eating bread in the Bible. So they were also eating meat. But what you have to do is sort of look at the different areas that you can pull from. The grain kingdom, you know, there's tons of grains that you can use that have great textures and that are nutritious. You look at legumes. Garbanzo beans or chickpeas, which are used, hand over fist in places like the Middle East. You look at regular beans that are used in South America and in the Caribbean and so on and so forth. Soybeans, tofu, tempeh, seitan, which was developed hundreds of years ago by Buddhists because they have areas of the year where they don't eat meat and they wanted something to have like a texture equivalent to what they were eating. And seitan is a wheat gluten product. So the thing that you have to look at replacing to your senses is going to be the texture. A lot of people will say, oh, I think it's going to be mushy because it's vegan. And it can be. There's some mushy vegan food, I'm not going to lie. But when you get to making the case for good vegan food, you have your grains, you have your legumes, and you move to the herb kingdom. There's tons of really delicious herb combinations and spice combinations you can come up with that are off the regular salt, pepper, butter, sugar sort of area of average, you know, cooking, which is sort of based on French technique. But the more that you get into other worlds, if you will, you know, I pull from an international palate. I want to know what people are cooking with in, you know, Thailand. I want to know what people are cooking with in Brazil. I want to know what herbs they're using and spices they're using in Morocco. I want to know all these things so I can sort of have this large palate so that when you taste my food, you're not tasting meat. You're tasting something new. You're getting the texture, you're getting the flavor, and getting the herbs, and it all is available from the earth.
So when people are first trying something vegan, does there have to be a shift in their palate? You know, if you're coming from a meat-based or a fat-based diet and you try something vegan right away, I think the impulse for a lot of people is like, well, that's not where I'm at. I mean, does there have to be a shift in the way they sense, the way they taste that food?
Yes, there has to be. You have to be open-minded. I think that's what I've come to find. With dealing with clients and so forth, people will, and it's interesting because a lot of times I will get clients who are either recovering from cancer or have had some chemotherapy or have cancer, or, you know, they've been to their doctor and they knew what I call being sentenced to veganism. And they've been, and they can't quite figure out what they're going to do. So that opens the mind in one way. It's hard to break old habits though for people. So people who are accustomed to a heavy meat, cheese, sort of diet, my activism is let me cook up some food I think you might like, and you might like it, you might not. I mean, I spent over, you know, 12 years of my career working in restaurants, so I get a pretty quick reaction on what's going to sell and what's not going to sell. And I feel like I always have something in my wheelhouse that I can give even the most hardened, you know, meat and potatoes guy, and have them be like, oh, okay, I didn't know that. Because it's almost like an elevation of consciousness. Like you have to understand it before you can actually believe it. And the only way that you can really show and prove with anything in the arts is you have to do it. You know, culinary arts, acting, music, whatever, you do it. And then like, but, oh, I never thought about it like that.
We're talking with Chef Ayinde Howell about the rise of veganism, and we'd like to hear from you. Are you a vegan? What influenced your decision to become one? Or are you just looking for ways to cook with maybe a little less meat, get meat and dairy out of a couple meals a week, looking for some ideas? Are you cooking for vegans this holiday season, looking for ideas, or just have questions for our vegan chef? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email at talk@wpr.org. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. We're picking up our conversation with Chef Ayinde Howell about going vegan. And you can join in the discussion at 800-642-1234. If going vegan is something you've thought about, if it's something you've done, give us a call. Tell us how it went for you. You can also post comments, by the way, on the Central Time Facebook page. Our phone number, again, 800-642-1234. Andy, one of the big questions that I often hear about veganism revolves about that idea of protein intake. You know, where does the protein come from? And you're going to have all sorts of problems. How do you respond to that?
The protein question. Wow. Okay, so you can get protein from all areas of the plant kingdom. You can get it from beans. You can get it from tofu. You can get it from tempeh. You can get it from wheat protein. You can even find it in vegetables. You can find it. I wrote an e-cookbook on just using avocados, because avocados are one of the only foods that have the 18 essential amino acids to create protein within the body. So there's a lot of ways where you can get protein. I haven't run into anyone with a protein deficiency. Now, I started to increase my workout regimen a little bit more. So there are times in your diet that you need to increase your level of calories overall, your protein, your carbohydrates, your sugars, and so on and so forth, if you want to do something different with your body. But the average meal is probably going to cover you. The thing that happens, though, when people go vegan is they just stop eating everything. Again, it comes back to, like, not being fully educated on how to find these things. It's like, well, I just don't want to eat meat anymore. Like, I read Skinny – I don't know if I can say that word. it's a book called Skinny Bleep. But there's a, you know, I've read this book, or I've, you know, watched this documentary, and I don't want to eat meat anymore. But they don't know what else to do. So it's like, I just had salads and I had, you know, popcorn. You know, obviously that's not going to be healthy for you. Again, where IEGRASS comes in, or Google in general, you could just, you know, sort of search, how do I replace, you know, protein here and there. So it's easy to do. It just takes a little bit of research, a little bit of question asking, and a little bit of sort of structuring of your diet and your food intake. And you'll be fine.
We'll go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We have Mark with us in Milwaukee. Hi, Mark.
Hello there.
Hi, Mark.
Thanks for taking my question. First of all, about proteins and amino acids, just a real quick comment. You know, quinoa, the green quinoa, has become much more popular, and it does have all nine of the essential amino acids. And secondly, no vegetable or few vegetables have all of the amino acids, but combinations as simple as beans and rice will give you all nine amino acids. My question, though, was I'm a vegan. I've been doing a vegetable-based diet for a long time, and I just decided to go completely vegan a few months ago, and I'm struggling with trying to figure out the best way to get enough vitamin D in my diet. And being in Wisconsin, you can't get out in the sunshine very much, especially when it's like 4 degrees.
Like it is now. Mark, thanks for the call. So he says quinoa or rice and beans for the protein, but where, given our limited sunlight, do we get the vitamin D without the animal products?
Well, you have to go to supplements. You can find vitamin D supplements on the shelf in your local, probably pharmacy, Rite Aid, or whatever the case may be that you have there. But vitamin D supplements are not necessarily. I thought he said B, which is something that people, vitamin B complex, which is something that people always ask about as well, which you should supplement in your diet. I always recommend to people that you should see a nutritionist. Before you start a full vegan diet, so you can sort of, you have to understand what your body needs. My body needs something, your body needs something, the caller's body needs something completely different. He may need more iron, he may need more B, he may need more vitamin D, he may need more vitamin C. I don't know, but as sort of speaking in a broad sense, supplements can always fill in that gap. And yes, quinoa is great. Quinoa and rice and beans is great. I use quinoa a lot with my gluten-free clients because it's a complex carbohydrate. So it has your protein and your carb in it right there. And it's a great energy source, too.
All right, 800-642-1234. We've got lots of folks who would like to join in. And we go to Madison now, and Mike is with us. Hi, Mike.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment. About a year ago, I started switching my diet over to being vegetarian, and probably within the last 3-4 months, I've switched over to being about 90% vegan.
Congratulations.
It's really done tremendous. It's done tremendous things for my health. I've lost lots of weight. I feel really, really good, and my wife is on, more or less the same diet as well. And it's done great things for her. We've got 3 kids. They're not necessarily on, entirely on board with, being vegetarian or certainly vegan. So we kind of have to split the household, but certainly some things have changed. It's really put a positive footprint in our household and in our lifestyle, all the way around. So it's, food is at the center of so much, and it's really impacted us, beyond the kitchen table.
Mike, thanks so much for that call. And I end it, Mike tells an interesting story there, and you do hear about those situations, where one part of the family goes vegan, another part of the family isn't quite on board with that. How do you deal with those sorts of internal struggles? Because, in families, that's where you're going to run into all sorts of resistance and all sorts of things.
I think when you have like a split household, you have to, it's funny, I know this from a dating perspective. Most of the women I've dated have not been vegan. It's about respecting the other person's choices and supporting it. I mean, when you live with someone, obviously it's very close quarters. If someone says, oh, well, I want to use my skillet for this, and you use your skillet for chicken and so on and so forth, then, it's really about listening to the other person and making sure that you support them in their decision. And, the person who is vegan, the more that they work at it and come up with better recipes and tastier food, if they're trying to, woo that partner or child or whatever over to their side, it works by example. But I know that there is actually a couple of cookbooks out that I think it's called slipped my mind, but I'll find it and I'll tweet it to you. But there's a gentleman who wrote a book. He has a house of vegetarians and omnivores and so forth, and he wrote a cookbook about it. I thought it was quite inspiring. But again, it just comes down to being committed to your decision. It's hard when you're divided at the dinner table because you're sitting across from someone who's like clearly making another choice about their life than you are. And when it really boils down to it, you are what you eat. And eventually, like a lot of my friends who are in their 30s and whatnot, they are coming to me now saying, Allende, I'm overweight, man. I gotta try this vegan thing. Send me some recipes. Send me some ideas. You can't really escape the ramifications of processed food. So it's best to start to sort of wean it out and then get yourself on the right path so that when you're in your mid-30s or your 40s, that it's not playing catch-up, like you're just maintaining. That's what I'm finding. I'm 35, so.
Thanks to Mike for the call. We've got Frank in Milwaukee on the line now. Frank, hi.
Hi. I was calling because I've given up dairy because of allergy reasons. But the thing with I've experimented with trying to be more vegetarian or give up meat, and I've tried the bulk of burgers. I've tried the meatless sausages, and I have to eat a lot of it in order to get satisfied. And even if I do that, it seems like I get hungry quick right away. I was wondering if there's something out there that really can satisfy my appetite as opposed to what I've been trying.
Gotcha. Frank, thanks for the call. Allende, do we just get used to it, or is there something he could be doing to feel a little more satisfied as he's making the transition?
Well, if you're transitioning from, again, a largely sort of protein and carbohydrate diet, then you do consume a lot more carbs as a vegan. The thing that I would say, so let's say you're having some vegan sausage and peppers or something that he's prepared. A great way to sort of boost that is put it over a bed of quinoa, add some sliced avocado. What else could you do to it? I mean, those things are not necessarily bloat filling, but they will, that's, you know, you're tripling down on your protein intake. You're also adding carbohydrates. You know, you're adding things that your body will need and convert to energy. And, you may have to eat more. I mean, if he's a bigger guy, you may have to eat more. And then eventually your stomach adjusts and it will sort of shrink down to the size that, it needs to be. Your body is whatever it needs to be at any given time with the food that you give it. So if you give it, less food over time, and you're like, okay, well, we don't need all this extra space here. We're just going to shrink it down a little bit.
Andy, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your advice today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me. I'm a big fan.
That's Allende Howell. He's an executive vegan chef, founder of IEatGrass.com.